to the 249th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I am your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome and thank you for listening. I hope you all are well. I think this is going to be a very encouraging podcast, both from things that I've learned over the last week and things that are happening with the COVID virus, and I think they all go together. And so I'm going to title this podcast a podcast of hope, or maybe put another way, never lose hope. And I'll explain that as we go along. But, first of all, backyard check-in, eggplants going good. We had sauce last night with eight eggplants in it. That's pretty cool. Collard greens early in the week from the backyard garden. Peppers are growing nicely. Mangoes are still hanging on the tree, so we're just waiting and watching, and little avocados are growing. So all is good in the backyard garden, as well as tower garden and microgreens, still doing those every day. Again, it's a great way to get some extra greens in, growing little microgreens in the windowsill. We've got broccoli and pea sprouts and beets going right now. So you can just kind of keep those up for your own consumption. I get the little trays and the jute mats. If you haven't heard about microgreens, I did do a podcast several episodes ago with Milo from Pure de Verita Green Microgreens, and he also has a good website to learn about growing microgreens. I've ordered my seeds from SproutPeople.com, but you can get them a variety of places. I'm not sponsored by the Sprout People. I'm not sponsored by anybody. I just do this on my own. It's so for people that can't hear and occasionally can complain about, that things are not quite right, it's because I do it all on my own for free. I do all my editing. It takes several hours, so I hope you'll bear with me. And some episodes are better than the others. Some have more background noises than the other. I'm doing this one from home today, so you may hear a little grunching in the background. So be it. Back to, I guess, what's going on with me and my injury. So after running the 39-mile, and it wasn't just after running the 39-mile weekend, it was building. Didn't follow my own advice as far as maintaining my strength training, and not making my easy days when they should be really easy and my harder days when they should be hard. You get caught up in the let's get faster mode and don't want to lose anything. So instead of taking adequate rest after an event, making easy days really, really easy, I pushed too hard, things started to get tight, a variety of things, coalesced to a perfect storm, and so I have an injury. And it's quite a common injury in runners. It's a nerve type injury, but it's not from a disc or my spine, but it's from a nerve, probably an L5 distribution that comes out. And so many runners have experienced this where they have some back tightness, but they may also have some pain in the hip, in the front of the hip, I'm sorry. It can be down the leg, or it can be in the lateral aspect of the hip. It can just depends on where that L5 gets hit between the muscles that are irritated. So if you think about it being like an electric cord that's frayed, it's causing a contraction of the muscle. And so when it does that, and when you continue to ignore it, then you start to get more imbalances that kind of squeeze that frayed nerve a little bit more, and everything gets really hyper irritated. The problem with this kind of injury is that it's kind of hard to put your finger on where exactly it's hurting, because there's some tightness in various locations. And like a lot of injuries, it's not necessarily coming from where it actually hurts. So even if you hurt your knee, it's usually not the knee itself. It's usually the quad recept or something else that's causing the problem, and you have to look elsewhere. So this particular injury, a lot of times it has to do with the psoas, which comes from the spine and hooks down on the thigh. We sit during the day. I try not to sit too much, but I do sit. I drive, just like everybody else. And that gets shortened. And then, of course, I go out and run. I come in from a run and, don't take much time to, go from that running to sitting position. So it can be irritated along the way, and that can be a problem. Glute strength and imbalance also causes, again, that whole area, things get tight, low back gets tight, hamstrings get tight. I've been reading a great book, and I think I'm going to have the guy on the podcast. He has wrote a book, Thomas Miller, Programmed to Run. You know, he writes about overstriding when we get tired, leaning back when we get tired. It's all a way of compressing things. And again, when you do a lot of hours and you're doing a lot of hours incorrectly, then you can get some tightness to occur. So, you know, I encourage everybody to run. I'm still standing by it's you're never too old not to run, meaning that everybody should try to move their body and do a little running. I think that, you know, there's no age where you can't. My mother's doing it right now, making me jealous. But, injuries are part of life, but you have to learn from them and figure them out. So what happened with my injury over the last week is that, you know, the first thing I started to do was see how quickly I could rehab from it. And so I thought it was a tight psoas, so I overstretched and, you know, did all kinds of things, hip mobility. I did, you know, some actual inversion table stretching. I did all kinds of really forced stretching. I did some weight workouts with probably heavier weight than I should because it really wasn't hurting at the time. I also did a lot of yard work that I felt really good after. So I was out in the sun all day Saturday last week doing a lot of weed whacking and mowing and so on my feet and my hip was unstable to the point where a couple episodes I'd have where I'd kind of jerk, I'd kind of lose my balance and I'd have this electrical discharge, and almost fall and have to kind of catch myself. And so that kind of caused more spasm, but I got to tell you that I didn't feel that bad after it was all done. On Sunday, we did a lot of, pulling up old mulch and weeds, all the way down to baseline, barrier and carried and pulled and bent over and put down mulch. And, you know, again, 3 or 4 hours of really labor-intensive work. I actually looked at my heart rate a couple times just to see if I was getting a good workout in. And, you know, my heart rate was staying pretty much in the 90s to 100. So I was moving pretty good for not – I was exerting myself pretty good for not moving a lot of distance. Back to work on Monday, and you know, it was just still nagging and almost just getting irritated from the whole, it's been long enough since I haven't run, and just getting a bit frustrated. And, you know, I do all kinds of stretching and maneuvering, and my nurse, you know, finally, you know, I was a little bit down the dumps about it. And she said, well, I think you should do 4 days of nothing. Absolutely nothing. You never do just nothing. And, I thought, well, you know, maybe she's right. I'm doing so many different things all at once. I'm throwing everything at this. I don't know what's really working. Maybe it's time to back off and see what's really, if doing nothing will release things. I'm someone that once I commit to something, it's really hard for me not to say that I'm not going to go through with it. But as soon as I said that I would do nothing for 4 days, I immediately regretted it. She actually had me sign a little contract. You know, we've been working together for 20 years. And so, you know, there's this thing, pinky swear, so to speak, sign the contract. She wrote it down. I'll do nothing. Don't walk the dog. Don't walk. Don't play Frisbee. Just sit in a chair and do nothing. And so I said, all right, I give this a chance. But as soon as I said that, it was like putting me in handcuffs. I regretted it immediately. My attitude changed. I called myself, I was in orthopedic hospice, you know, I couldn't do anything. I was babying myself, sitting in a chair. And it's like, okay, if this is psoas tightening, I'm sitting in a chair, I'm actually making it worse. I work very hard to, get myself in shape and get all these muscles and just to stop and let everything atrophy down. I'm not sure, what would be the mechanism of not doing anything, to let myself heal. And, we used to do this, right? A long time ago, if somebody broke their leg, they made them immobile. If somebody had a disc herniation, they would put them to bed and, make them immobile. If somebody had surgery, they would put them to bed and say, not do anything. Let your body heal itself by just staying really still. And that's all been discredited. You know, when people have surgery and they don't move afterwards, they're prone to get more pneumonias, pulmonary emboli. They get weak. You know, the best thing you can do for an elderly person that breaks their leg is we get them up the next morning, even though it hurts, and starts moving them around. So even if you're 90, we move people. We don't want them to get blood clots. We don't want to get adhesions. If anybody's ever had a shoulder injury and they didn't move it, then they get a frozen shoulder. And, you know, then they need some sort of surgery. So it's like, you know, this has not been shown to work in any situation. And I agree to it, you know, at a moment of just being low. And so I immediately just regretted it. Yes, I was doing too much, but, you know, obviously doing nothing was not the right answer, but I committed to it. So I thought I would give it a shot. Well, you have to know, and if you have been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that I have a lot of balls in the air most of the time, and that's how I function, and that's how I love to live. I get up and I exercise in the morning. I take care of my animals. I go to work. I do a podcast. We do nutrition class 3 days a week. You know, I put out a blog post. You know, I do my own yard work. I garden. You know, so something is always going on all the time. So just to say stop is a very dangerous idea for somebody that has. I have a lot of energy. You know, I eat plant-based. I need something to do with myself, and just sitting in front of a computer or reading a book. I love to read, but I read for a couple of hours, or I read for an hour and then move around. It's not something that I can just sit still and you know, do for hours on end. So it's not my personality. And I became very depressed. My whole psyche about this injury changed. Nothing but negative thoughts. I really regretted not being able to move. I'd see somebody walking as I'm driving to work, and it just made me feel sick at my stomach that I couldn't be outside. Not getting fresh air made it worse. And it's like, yes, you could go outside and sit, but no, you know, if you're somebody that moves all the time, to go outside and sit in a chair was just not going to do it for me. And plus I was doing other things. Just to take time to sit on a chair was, you know, not really an option. So I became, you know, not only depressed, but, you know, angry about the whole situation. And so I also realized that that's not the way I'm going to heal either, because I've got to have some positive mental attitude to be able to make recovery. And, you know, I'm going to liken this to, again, somebody taking someone's hope away. So, and yes, this is a dramatic, you know, you can say, well, this is very much different. But, again, it's not. If you look at it, if somebody had a terrible injury and, you know, you hear it all the time, they were, you know, the doctor came in and said, you'll never walk again. And the person became very depressed. And, you know, sometimes the person, you know, learned to do other things. It was just, maybe it was a call to action, but it certainly wasn't a good call to action at first. They became very depressed afterwards. You know, a better way to have put that would be, what can you do? You know, so maybe you can't walk right now, but you can do these things. So, you know, again, approach to an injury, it's not what you can't do, but let's focus on what you can do. And I think that physical movement is very important to everyone, but especially important to people that are used to being active. So if, you know, someone breaks a bone or somebody, you know, active recovery. Now, it comes down to being able to do active recovery and not injure yourself worse, which is, again, that's a slippery slope. So do I try, you know, if I just go along limping and ignoring this injury, will I make it worse or heal slower? I have to tell you, in the past when I've had various injuries, whether it's plantar fasciitis or tendonitis of my knee or Achilles tendonitis or threw my back out in the past, I've never woke up one morning and said, I'm better. And I have no pain, and I'm going to go back out, and I run pain-free, and it's like a light switch. It's never ever occurred to me that way. Even when I had a stress fracture, I've had two stress fractures, and I'm talking over 20 years of running, so that, you know, my injuries have, there have been injuries, but they've not been, you know, they're not, you know, every week or so. But I had a stress fracture of my metatarsal and a stress fracture of my tibia. And at some point, you have to say, okay, this is healed enough, and there's pain, but I'm going on with my life, and you work your way back. And at some point, one day, you run without pain again. And I think that, you know, so it's being smart, not pushing yourself to being, you know, more injured, but also you have to realize that you're not going to come back without some discomfort and have to actually move at some point. And you just try to do things a little bit smarter the next time. You know, even with a cardiac patient that has a heart attack, we don't have them lay in a bed. We have them get up and walk, and then we're gradually training their heart to move. We used to, when I was in doing my fellowship, you know, after somebody had a heart attack, we had a great cardiac rehab, and we would start people in the first, you know, the first week after, now people just get kicked out after their angioplasty, we'd start them on a walking program. And we actually would do before and after stress tests on them to see where they were. Now, not maximal stress tests, but to see where their heart rate and what they, you know, what their functional capacity was, and then train them for the final exam stress test. And we would take people that, you know, were not walkers and make them great walkers by the end. But again, it occurred at a gradual pace, and we started from the beginning. Again, you know, we don't want people to be a cardiac cripple. You know, you have heart disease, you've had angioplasty, you've had bypass. Okay, so now we take and we make you go forward. And we know through plant-based nutrition that by eating your greens, your nitric oxide producing greens, all the cabbages, kale, Swiss chard, beets, beet tops, cauliflower, broccoli, arugula, eating those, you actually make your own nitric oxide that allows you to develop these little collateral arteries that actually increase blood flow to your heart. So you can be better than you were before after your cardiac injury and come back from it. So there's nobody that can't come back and actually make themselves better. And then by exercising, you open up the blood flow to your legs, and so it's easier for your heart to pump. So that's an example of taking somebody after an acute cardiac injury and not just laying them to bed to deteriorate. Same thing after pneumonia. We want people up and walking so they can use their lungs. We give people a respirometer by their bedside so they can start exercising their lungs even before they're healed, so that they start to get stronger and they don't get weaker. We want people out of bed right away. We don't want their blood to coagulate. So, you know, there's no reason for this to not do anything. And how? And then, you know, again, I never realized the mental aspect of not doing anything. And I know a lot of people are depressed. I know a lot of this with the quarantine, people become depressed. They're away from people. You know, we need social interaction. And because that's been taken away, our routine's been taken away, a lot of people have lost their job. There's a lot more stress. And so depression sets in. So if people are at home and they're inside and they're not moving, that's going to add to this depression. We know the best treatment for depression is actually moving. So there have been studies where people are put on an exercise program and their depression gets better than any of the medications that we don't know what they do. So it's important for physical activity for everybody, for every injury, and basically for every illness. And if you think about, you know, back to the mental aspect of things, if you have a stress and you're worried, you know, my mother used to say, I'm very good at worrying, so I do it well. But it's how does the worry help you? It doesn't. But if you can assess the situation and formulate a plan and institute that plan, initiate that plan, then you start to feel better because you have some control over the situation. It may not be total control, but you have some control over the situation. Doing nothing just leads to more worry and frustration. If there's a hurricane predicted for Florida, we take precautions. We get our furniture in. We get water. We make sure we have canned goods. The generator's working. We prepare. If you're up north and you have a snowstorm's coming, you prepare. You have snow tires. You just don't sit back and wait. Atlanta, they kind of do. Atlanta, I was there one time, and they just went inside and waited for the snow to melt. But I don't think that's a great idea. So I think that you're always better if you have an action plan, you know, and some glimmer of hope. And if I have anything to say to anyone who is dealing with somebody with an injury or an illness, even a catastrophic life-threatening illness, you never lose hope. I think when you lose hope, that's really the end. And you got to have hope, and there always is hope until the very end. Hope for, you know, a few more hours, a little better of a day, or at least a hope for peace. So you can't ever take hope away from a person. And I was taught that early in medical school. And again, I can't believe I was allowed to let somebody actually kind of let me take hope away from myself. You might ask why you did it. And again, I'm just, you know, stubbornness thinking that, you know, I made a mistake. I'm going to ride this out and see it as an experiment. And there was a little part of me that wondered, you know, wonder if I don't do anything, would I get better? If I thought that, you know, after a day I saw some improvement, you know, would I be encouraged to ride it out? Yes. But I could see that with each day I was getting worse. Again, worse from a mental aspect, but even worse from a physical aspect. Different things were starting to tighten up. I saw a little bit of freeness. Again, the deterioration after 2.5 days was marked. So, you know, where do I go from here? I'm starting back at, you know, again, assess the situation, try to figure out what is the problem, where is it coming from, not aggravate it, but also not keep myself from moving. So I know that my core needs to be strong, like everybody's core needs to be strong. So, you know, one of the exercises are bird dogs. So you're on your hands and knees and you extend your right leg back and your left arm forward. Your right leg is barely, your toes are barely off the ground. It's basically like the same extension as running. So your leg is fully extended like you were going to toe off behind you, not in the air, but just extended. And then you bring your hand and your knee underneath to meet at the beginning, in the middle underneath you, re-extend, and then go to the next leg. You can look up bird dogs on, you know, you can Google it and see how those are done. A lot of people kick their leg up in the back high, and that's shown in some exercises. It's okay if you're not injured, but if you're injured and you have any back pain, you're better off to let that leg be low and extend it for a nice stretch and a muscle relaxation, because you want all those paraspinal muscles to release and to line up again. So if you're really forcefully contracting your leg up into the air, you're not getting that as much. I also have noticed that, you know, my right hip is not quite as mobile as my left hip, so I'll work on a little mobility there. But again, be cautious to assess after you do something, did it make it better or worse? And if it made it worse, then we're going to back off on that for a while. And then progress these exercises as possible. I went out today and threw the Frisbee for the dog. They felt better. I felt better. You know, I don't know that I'll walk the dogs until I feel really stable, other than just real locally, because I don't want to get pulled as an accident to that's another thing that kind of set me back was a neighbor's cat ran out in front of my two dogs one morning, and, you know, the one dog really lunged and caught me by surprise, and that, you know, kind of set me back. So I'm trying to avoid setbacks. But again, you know, we know that every day is not, you know, it's not a straight line up to health. And I deal with that with my diabetics as well. You know, we wean their insulin as their glucose comes down, and it's never a straight shot down to zero insulin. So there are good days and bad days. Sometimes their sugars are higher, and we may go 5 or 6 days and not move on the insulin and then move again. So it depends. Everything, you know, nothing in life is a straight line one way or another. If you look at a curve on any study, they're up and downs. When you try to apply it to one person, it makes it even more difficult. That's part of the confusion of how to treat and somewhat to treat yourself, which is not necessarily a good idea, but you need to find somebody you can trust that can give you good advice. Having had this injury before, way back when I first, a couple marathons into my running career, I had this happen to me. And So I pretty much know what path I should follow. The frustrating point is I know it's not a quick path. It's going to take me a while to get back. Thanks to COVID, I don't have any races coming up for a while. So the idea is to come back stronger, come back with better form, and keep getting better. You know, I keep looking to my mentors that are in their 80s and 70s that are setting records and doing endurance events and say, yes, I can come back from that. I look to my mentors that are running without legs, that are in a wheelchair, and it's like, yes, I can come back from this little injury. And I can say that because I have hope that I'm doing something positive, not just sitting back waiting for something to kick in, some pain medicine to, you know, wax it. I'm not taking anything. I'm taking a little turmeric, just try to get the inflammation down a little bit. But I'm not taking anything to mask the pain because I need to know if something's hurting me in order to move forward safely. So that's really a long-winded speech about, you know, where I am and what my plans are. But the idea is to keep moving and to get outside and, you know, to do things. And, you know, I'm probably going to go back to my yard work again. Did that make things a little worse or maybe delay my recovery? You know what? If it delayed it by a day, again, I don't have a race in, you know, anytime soon. I was going to try to, we were going to try to do a virtual ultra like we were scheduled in April. I think that would be a really bad idea and make things a lot worse. So I'm not going to do that. The idea is to get me back to running easy as soon as I can. That's my goal. To get back easy and then to build up as the pain goes away. So it's one step at a time for that. And I think it's not a lot like, you know, I wanted to share some COVID updates with you because I think that, you know, again, as far as hope and negativity, there's certainly a lot of it out there. My heart goes out to people that don't have a job right now. I hope that your employer is supporting you. You know, I hope you can get the funds from the government that you need to. I hope that, you know, people stick together and neighbors stick together to help each other out. I think being plant-based at this time is a good way to get your health back. Beans and rice are really cheap, you know, get some, you know, cheap frozen vegetables when you can find it, if that's where it's at. Again, we have a collard plant back in the backyard. And you can start some growing some things on your own. That's a good time to do that. Get some fresh vegetables when you can. And it might be a good time to lean up, you know. So, you know, focusing on just the healthy foods, not the treats, is a great way to, you know, really get your health back. I think that the best thing we can do for COVID is to have a good immunity and a good immune system. And that means giving our bodies a lot of fiber so that our good gut microbes can, again, you know, position ourselves to have a good immune response to anything. The great news of this is that children are very rarely get anything more than a bit of a upper respiratory tract or mild flu. You know, only children that are sort of very sick from other reasons might get, you know, more sick. But if you look at the hospitalizations per 100,000 people, in the 5 to 17 year age group, there was 0.1 per 100,000 hospitalizations. If you move to the 18 to 49 year old age range, there are only 2.5 hospitalizations per 100,000 people. This is from the CDC.gov. It's not, I didn't make it up. 65 and over, 13.8 per 100,000 people. That is not a lot of hospitalizations. I repeat, that is not a lot of hospitalizations. When you get to New York and congested areas where there's a lot of people, then there's a more hospitalization because they have more people. That's where you're seeing the numbers are being higher. And even those curves are starting to flatten off. I think it's a disservice for people to go on to be on television and say there are going to be 100,000 deaths in the United States when we're not going to have anything close to that. Right now, we sit at 14,696 deaths. I regret, and my heart goes out to everyone who has a family member that has died from this or anything this year. But we're right in line with, you know, it's somewhat worse than a general influenza season. But for the most part, we can have 14,000 to 18,000 deaths a year with the general flu. We certainly had more with H1N1. And so to project, you know, we're in April right now. It's going to get warm. This disease, this virus is going to go away. It's really humid today in Florida. Those droplets can't stay in the air. You know, this is going away. And we're not going to get to 70,000 deaths in the United States. It's not going to happen. Our hospital census here in Florida is starting to go down. The curves are starting to flatten around the United States. So again, what can you do to avoid getting this? If you're immunocompromised, you have diabetes that's poorly controlled, you need to stay away from people for a while. You need to eat as healthy as you can. You need to eat in a way that your diabetes is going to go away. This doesn't mean going out and, you know, getting comfort foods. This does mean going outside and doing some walking every day, doing some exercise. We're doing exercise with our members online. You know, did a Zoom class. Addie had a weight training circuit routine this week. You know, so we want people to stay healthy and we want people to move. You know, we want people to eat right to avoid, to be able to fight these infections. This is a good time to be able to get off your blood pressure medications. The question about ACE inhibitors and ARBs for blood pressure, take them, don't take them. You know, the consensus is for people to continue to take their blood pressure pills, even though they might be worse with the way COVID infects respiratory cells, but nobody knows. So the easiest answer is to get off the salt, get moving, get off the fat, eat your greens, let your blood pressure come down, and then you don't need any blood pressure medicines. That's the best way to go about this, to reverse your blood pressure. Some people, despite, you know, doing all those things, still have high sympathetic tone. Then you have to look at your breath. You have to look at breathing, diaphragmatic breathing, getting your vagal tone up. You know, that's where it goes. And again, back to our moods. You know, my sympathetic tone had to be really high over these last couple of days. I'm very agitated, not moving, getting out and moving. Just the sense of, okay, I'm going to get out of orthopedic hospice, made me feel much better, lighten my load, lighten my sympathetic load, made me more conscious, you know, more able to breathe my heart rate down. Being in shape, low heart rates, low sympathetic tone is all good for you, good for your blood pressure. So those are things you can do besides sitting, waiting for this to pass and being frustrated. And I think it's real important that, again, there's hope. We're going to get back. This is going to go away. It's probably not going to come back. And even if it does come randomly, it's not going to be in, you know, it's not going to overtake us, especially if you have, if you're healthy. We need to focus on protecting our elderly, giving them good food. I mean, in nursing homes, they get crappy food and they're, they don't get any sunlight. How can they possibly defend themselves? So that's where we need to go with this. And as far as this, you know, the drugs trials, you know, we need to look simple. You know, just empirically giving people just because we can doesn't mean anything. You know, you can't do a study of one. You can't do anecdotal cases that this might help. We need to look simple studies, 2 weeks. Did patients live or die with taking these medications? Randomized controlled trial. Did they do better or not? If they you know, got off a ventilator one day earlier, but then they died, that's not a success story. You know, it's just like the old joke, you know, the patient survived the surgery but then died 2 days later and the surgeon doesn't count it as a death. The surgery definitely caused the death. He would have been fine if he hadn't had the surgery perhaps, you know. So you have to look at the drug trials have to be done the correct way and done in a controlled manner. And unfortunately, they're not being done that way right now. So, you know, the thought of I need these drugs and I need to take these prophylactically, beware. These drugs all have side effects. So again, it comes back to what can you do? And if you've kept your own house in order and prepared, that's the best thing you possibly can do. So I think that, you know, I'm going to close things up and just say that if you're part of a healthcare system that's not providing you hope, then you need to get out of that system. I think that's the main thing that we need to do. We need to eliminate people from feeling like they're victims of the healthcare that we currently have. In our office, again, we are doing wellness challenges. We are doing online, you know, Zoom classes for exercise. We are doing continuing our nutrition classes weekly. We're talking to our patients, weekly and calling them up to make sure everybody's okay and to what you can do. We've done great in our practice. We have not had anybody that had to go to the hospital through this flu season in our practice. And we've had no patients that have had heart failure symptoms or heart attacks because we're doing something about it. We're not waiting for somebody to have heart attacks or waiting to see when their stress test becomes positive and then having them, get a stent for no apparent reason. We're actually tackling this stuff from the get-go. We are encouraging people to report in with their glucoses so that we can get them off of their medications. The people that report in and have a plan are actually implementing that plan, are making great, great leaps with their glucoses, and they're getting rid of insulin and getting rid of medications. We had a lady this week that she started out by saying, I don't like plants. I don't like vegetables. I don't like any vegetables is what she said. Her friend conned her into joining my practice. She's had a stroke. She has high blood pressure on large doses of medication. She's had gastric bypass, can't lose any more weight. I don't like vegetables, but we went through it and yes, she does like some vegetables. She liked broccoli and cauliflower and carrots. A lot of them she likes raw better than cooked. I think largely because she's not sure exactly how to prepare them in a way that she likes them. But she, we found a lot of vegetables that she actually liked. She liked a lot of fruit. She doesn't like beans because of the texture, but really she hadn't ever experienced beans when she, went over things with her dietitian, Addie, that she really hadn't eaten beans since she was a child. And she decided way back when she's a child that she didn't like beans. And so we talked about ways to kind of start to implement them into her diet. And it worked so well that she called us 2 days, 3 days into things, and she almost fainted because her blood pressure dropped. And, that's because she got out of all this salty prepared food that she was eating. And so we backed off on two medications in 1 week on her blood pressure. That's how quick things can turn around. We've seen cholesterols drop, from the high 200s down into the 100s just by making some subtle changes into people's diet that they think is pretty, pretty good. I had one person ask me this week, well, you got to have a little fish. It's Easter. We're going to have the Easter feast and, you have to have a little something. And I don't think we want your diabetes to go away. We want you not to have a stroke. We want you not to have claudication. Those are such great things. This is what we're going to do to avoid those. And, can I tell you not eating fish is going to make you live 2 days longer? No, but can I tell you not eating fish is probably going to make you live 2 days better? I think I can. I think I can because you're not going to have the inflammation. It's the perspective and the ways of looking at things. This person that, thought he needed some fish loves vegetables, loves vegetables, and is a really good cook. It's just a mindset that we think we need to. And, he's actually Polish. And I said, if you were eating like a poor Polish person from, back in the wartime, you would be healthy right now. Go back to our roots, go back to the cabbage and the root vegetables and the potatoes for Eastern Europeans. Go back to the, homemade type sauces and little bits in vegetables for Italians and a little bit of pasta, but more, oil out of things. Go back to a variety of colorful vegetables and go back to fruits. The lady that, only likes fruit and some vegetables. We'll work from there and work our way up. It's much better to be healthy and work our way up. And then, and then you start to see the results. So I want you to have hope. That is the biggest takeaway for today. You got to have hope. I want to give everybody hope. If you'd like hope with us, email me at jamie@drdelaney.com, jami@drdelaney.com is docTorDuLaney. You know, you can go check out our website. Our online members have full access to our Facebook group or on our private website information. You know, we put, again, wellness challenges, workout circuits, menus, and our online people have access to our dietitian. So, you know, we can help people become healthier, and we can do it in a compassionate way, and we can do it by having hope. So, you know, I always say maybe I'm not a good motivator, but I hope that I am good at showing you that you have to have hope and that there is hope always. So happy Easter, happy Passover, happy spring. Be healthy, eat your vegetables, get out and get some sunshine, and I'll talk to you next week.